Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. In 2013, the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, embarked on an ambitious effort to modernize its information technology infrastructure, transforming from an agency with 207 different IT systems to one with a cloud-based common data platform that would play a significant role in creating a more dynamic and agile enterprise. This transformation has been orchestrated by the FCC's Chief Information Officer, Dr. David Bray. He understood that making this IT vision into a reality would require introducing a myriad of challenges to how the FCC managed its IT systems and services. It would also involve effecting broader cultural change across the agency's 18 different bureaus and offices. Most importantly, Bray recognized that the current state of IT spend on maintaining existing systems was unsustainable and unacceptable for an organization that was supposed to be at the forefront of 21st century communications technology. The FCC's IT division was lagging behind. What has the FCC done to transform its IT infrastructure? How has the FCC Chief Information Officer cultivated a network of change agents? What is the FCC doing to cultivate a culture of risk-taking and experimentation? We will explore these questions and so much more with my very special guest, Dr. David Bray, Chief Information Officer within the FCC. David, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Michael. Glad to be here.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Dave Hathaway. Dave, welcome.
Thank you.
David, I'd like to go from general to specific as a way to set context for our conversation. To that end, perhaps you could provide us with a brief overview of the history, mission, and overall size of the U.S. Federal Communications Commission.
So the mission of the Federal Communications Commission dates back to the 1930s, in which we were actually the follow-on for the Federal Radio Commission. So everything wired and wireless within the United States. So whether it's satellite radios, whether it's your ham radio, whether it's anything involving spectrum or how you get that license for spectrum, FCC interacts with the public and with industry to make sure that the interest of the nation is represented. And so anything that's wired or wireless, you can actually see on your wired devices or wireless devices, you'll see an FCC logo. That means it's actually been approved to be used at that spectrum. And so FCC, it's actually fairly small for everything it does. It's only about 750 people. With that, it's a lot of issues ranging from the economics of wired devices to the markets to the spectrum.
Hey, I'd like to get a sense of the scale of operation. If you can just give it. So you're in a mission support area, a critical mission support area. How is the organization organized? What's the size of its budget? Give us a sense of that. And sure. You already mentioned the number of folks that work there. Is there a geographical footprint or is it largely in D.C.?
So there are 18 different bureaus and offices, ranging from wireless to wireline to public safety to consumer space. And the budget is about $388 million. And there are really two main geographical footprints. There's a lot of people here in D.C. There's also a place up in Gettysburg. Mm-hmm. And then we have a few field offices around the United States.
And now you've given us a sense of the larger organization. Can you tell us more about your area and your specific role? What are the specific responsibilities and duties of the Chief Information Officer at the FCC?
So, my primary duties, I would say, are a digital diplomat and human flak jacket as being the FCC CIO. And so what does that specifically entail? How do we actually operate at enterprise scale across the 18 different bureaus and offices? When I arrived, there were 207 different IT systems on premise.
So regarding your duties and responsibilities, and you kind of alluded to just one, the transformation issue that you're dealing with, what are some of the, say, three top management challenges you've faced since your tenure at FCC, and how have you sought to address those challenges?
So I think the first was, how do we do what we need to do in terms of transformation in a way that's not just linear incremental updates, but really is game-changing, and at the same time manage the friction associated with it. Anytime you're going to try and make change, anytime you're trying to do something to make it better, there's still going to be a resistance to doing it because people may be used to the processes or used to the user interfaces that were associated with it. And so my big challenge was to demonstrate enough small successive wins building up to a larger win. And we actually did that with our consumer help desk. So we had a 15-year-old consumer help desk. It literally had 18 different forms that you had to figure out which was the right form to fill out and then mail it or fax it to the FCC, and we would somehow ingest it. Clearly, we could do a better way. And so part of the change was not just looking at how we could do it better in terms of technology. In fact, that was really only 20% of the issue. It was so that we could actually come up with a better way of doing it so that you didn't actually have to guess which of the 18 forms was the right one. It was almost like TurboTax, where you sort of start answering, who are you, what's the nature of your issue, and before you know it, having just filled out 6 or 7 fields, you've now actually completed the actual form without even knowing there was a form. And actually, the interesting thing with that is we were changing processes and people were very resistant up until the point we launched it. And then after we launched it, about 3 or 4 months later, some of our biggest people that were resisting it now said this is the best thing that ever happened. Behind the scenes, in terms of actual solution, we actually were able to do it at 1/6 the price. It was quoted as being about $3.2 million to do it on-prem, custom development taking about 18 months. We actually did it in less than 6 months and did it for $450,000 total, including contractor time. So that's the first challenge. The next challenge was the workforce, both the IT workforce I have. I have about 400 people if you include contractors as well as government people. The IT workforce was feeling disempowered and sort of just demoralized. But also the Bureau of Offices and our broader public stakeholders were feeling kind of like there wasn't anything good coming out of what was being done in terms of IT at the FCC, to be honest. And that wasn't the case. There was a lot of good happening, but it was almost a self-fulfilling prophecy, which is if you don't think anything good's going to happen, then nothing is perceived as being good. Our FCC.gov website back in 2010, 2011 was unfortunately launched without a lot of stakeholder input and was actually so bad that apparently some people might have been called before Congress to testify, could you find things on the website? Because it didn't incorporate good scientific approaches to user design. And so with that, also over the last 2 years, what I've been very intentional about is have a Big Ten approach, bring in stakeholders, both internal and external to the FCC, recognizing that there's a lot of processes baked into what people are used to doing. And when we make the push to technology being better, it really is just technology is 20%. It's really about making the processes better. The challenge is there's so many different views about what the best process should be. We actually have started using scientific approaches where we'll do A-B testing, much like they do in Silicon Valley. We'll actually have card sorting where you can sort what's the most important function to you, because if you try to do design by committee, you end up with nobody happy. So you really have to have a scientific approach. And so sort of showing a way that could actually bring our stakeholders in and actually motivate both the stakeholders and the team to think that actually good things are possible, that was really an uphill battle for the first year and a half in my role. And then finally, really just sort of communicating that we need to do things at exponential speed. And what do I mean by that? Well, the broader context of what the FCC is looking at is back in 2013, there were 7 billion network devices on the face of the planet. There were 7 billion human beings. And that was actually an interesting tipping point because the same number of network devices there are humans. Just 2 years later in 2015, we're now up to 14 billion network devices, only about 7.3 billion human beings. The good news is we're not going up exponentially. By 2020, we're looking at anywhere between 50 and 200 billion network devices. And so even if I modernize the IT at the FCC, which is what we're doing, we have to also think about how do we do the business of the FCC in an exponential era as well. And so that's working very closely with our bureaus and offices. But communicating that message and making people actually think that it's not just linear or that it's not just that we can do things incrementally better, we have to do them transformatively better, especially when it's changing processes. That's probably been my hardest challenge, but I think, fortunately, over the last 2.5 years, the message is getting out.
And I know when you're dealing with these kind of challenges, there's always anticipated and unexpected surprises. So what surprised you most since you've taken on this role?
Probably the thing that has surprised me the most is the power of a large, committed team of individuals to begin to inspire each other. So when I first arrived, what I would do is about every 3 or 4 months, I'd do a pulse check where usually we would have all hand meetings, and all hands meetings is when we'd share what was going on. We'd have different people share what was going on. And every once in a while, I would just throw a curveball where we'd get together for an all hands meeting. I was like, okay, I'm just going to listen to you all. I'm just going to actually only use Socratic method. And the run question I want to ask you all is, how are things going today? How are we doing as a team? And the first time I did it, the team was kind of hesitant. They didn't know exactly what I was going with this, but I said, I really want to hear your opinions. And it was probably about 10 to 15% that were excited. There was a sizable majority of about 50%, 45 or 50% that were sitting on the sidelines, and they were honest enough to say, well, your last few predecessors were in and out in less than 6 to 7 months, so why should we put our trust with you? And that was honest of them, and I appreciate that. And then the other ones actually wanted things to go back to the way things were back in the 1990s. And at that point, actually, there was somebody that said, I have a beef. And I was like, okay, can you tell me a little bit more? And the person said, it happened 17 years ago. And I was like, all right. Share me more. And it turned out it was when FCC started shifting to having more contractors and government people. And I said, I appreciate your concern. We're all partners in this. How do you think we can work together better? And again, I was only using the Socratic method. But in some respects, you just have to get it on the table because let people share their concerns because that's the only way we can move forward. So that was when I first arrived in the first 3 or 4 months. I did it again another 6 months in, so about 10 months into the job, and we had grown from being 10 to 15% that were optimistic to now about 30%. And then when I did it again, it grew up to probably about in my year and a half mark, it had gotten past the tipping point of being 50% were gung-ho. The most interesting thing is most recent time I did this about 4 months ago, we were now up to 80% were very optimistic.
You've kind of alluded to your leadership approach in your sharing of stories, but could you delve a little deeper into it? Would you outline some of your key leadership principles and perhaps maybe illustrate how you've employed them?
Definitely. And actually, the nice thing is I can actually say part of when I was doing my dissertation was I was looking for data to actually back what are good leadership styles, particularly in ambiguous or turbulent environments. And what I can say is the data shows there's three things you need to embody as a leader. The first is you need to cultivate a diversity of perspectives. In a rapidly changing environment, if you have a monoculture in which everyone's thinking the same thing, you're going to miss things. And so I actually try to, when I assemble teams, I actually like skeptics. I like dissenters. And I say it's okay that we professionally disagree. I want to have a diversity of views. And that's both diversity of views, cognitive diversity, how we approach things. I mean, if you think about it, Frank Lloyd Wright, wonderful architect, but unfortunately his buildings are falling apart. And so it would have been much better to have Frank Lloyd Wright with an engineer next to him so they could both inform each other as opposed to just one expert by themselves. The second thing is you need to empower the edge. In a rapidly changing environment, top-down is not going to be able to respond with the speed. If you're actually waiting for the top of the organization to actually figure out what's going on, it's just going to take forever. And so what you really need to do is, if you're at the top or if you're in an executive role, you need to empower your edge as much as possible to have autonomy to adapt and respond. And so one of the things I've been doing at the FCC as well and in past roles is when I call change agents together, I say, I'm going to give you three things. I'm going to give you autonomy. I'm going to give you measurable progress, because the interesting thing is measurable progress helps both me, but also motivates the person. And then finally, a compelling mission. And if you can embody those three things, then I'm going to invest in you and you can run forward and see what you can do. The third thing that actually you have to do too is you have to work horizontally outside of just your own organization. You have to have an ecosystem approach. And so that's partly why I'm on social media.
Who has, from a leadership perspective, really influenced your style?
First and foremost, I have to say, I have to give credit to my parents. My father is a Methodist minister. My mom's a school teacher. And the older I get, I realize I've become them. my father's skill set was, his skill sets were two things. He was good at capital planning for churches, as well as healing fragmented congregations. And particularly the fragmented congregation bit, but also the capital planning. Having a strategy, I realized that's what I embody in my role. It's just in a public sector approach as opposed to the church approach, what he would do. And then my mother's side, she was the extrovert of the family and the hostess and creating a safe space. So one of the things I've been doing for the last 6 years outside of work, about every 2 weeks, is I host an informal, non-attribution creative brainstorm that's open to anybody, both private sector and public sector. And it's really just a happy hour outside of work. We create it as a non-attribution space so you can feel safe to have conversations that maybe you wouldn't feel having safe if it was on the record. And I really started it because if you're banging your head against the wall as a change agent, it's nice to know you're not the only one. And it's a safe space. But the reason why I highlight that and why I attribute that to my mother is there was a time early on in my dad's career when the bishop was visiting them. And it was the 70s, so fake nails were in style. And her thumb caught on fire when she was lighting a candle for the dinner. And most people would blow out that candle or blow out the thumb. But no, she turned with her thumb on fire and looked at the bishop and said, "Want a light?" with her hand on fire. My dad said he saw his short career pass before his eyes. But I highlight that because if you're not having fun at work and if you can't laugh at what you're doing, something's wrong. And I think that's sort of the embodiment that we try to do is that, you know, yes, we have some very serious things. Yes, we have stressful events, but we need to smile.
What has the FCC done to transform its IT infrastructure? We will ask Dr. David Bray, its Chief Information Officer, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.